Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you're the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful.
Summer is here and the living's easy.
It's great, isn't it?
It is.
It's fun.
I'm just in a happier mood, I got to be honest.
Well,
every
you don't
day.
Have any stress, really.
I really
you don't.
You don't
have the stress from work.
I slept till 7:15 in the morning.
No way.
Flawlessly through the night. Never happens.
No, I don't sleep through the night anymore either.
That's because you have a dog that doesn't
need you. I know. Or my youngest daughter is making ramen noodles at 3 o'clock because I'm starving.
Because you don't feed her.
Possessed by the demon. All right.
So, Jen, I have another case for our stellar summer surprise of shockers.
Ganza camping stories.
Yep, yep.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Here we go.
Mini episode.
Summertime is here, and with it comes barbecue, swimming,
yum,
and a time to relax. Families head out to travel and see the country. What no one can ever imagine is how your dream vacation can turn into a nightmare.
Just like that.
It was September 13th, 1982, when Detective Mike Eastham was summoned to a campsite in Wells Gray Park Provincial in British Columbia, Canada.
Canada, really? Okay.
I always thought Canada.
Okay.
It's Canada. I know that.
Okay.
I like it better that way.
It's by Minneapolis.
It is by Minneapolis. Eastham was not quite sure of what he was going to find, but he had been told there was a fire and that they had discovered one body at that point. Once on site, they located a car that was burned badly, but there was no mistaking the bone fragments inside the car, and those bones belong to humans. Not quite sure if there were one or two bodies inside the vehicle because it had been so badly burned. But sadly, they weren't finished. Once the trunk was opened, the shock hit hard. Two small skeletons were inside.
That's not
funny. And one of the skulls had what appeared to be a bullet hole in it. Authorities had a homicide on their hands, and they suspected that they already knew who this beautiful family was that was wiped out while on vacation. August 2nd, 1982, Bob and Jackie Johnson, along with their daughters, 13-year-old Janet and 11-year-old Karen, decided to join with Jackie's parents, George and Edith Bentley, for a two-week camping vacation.
Oh, that's 2 weeks too long.
3 weeks later, on August 23rd, Bob's boss called authorities when Bob had failed to show up for work. The families were officially missed at that point, and missing person cases were filed. The two adult bodies found in the car would turn out to be Bob and Jackie, and the two small skeletons that were located in the trunk were their young daughters, Karen and Janet. George and Edith Bentley were still missing at this point. Also missing was their truck that had a camper shell on it. A huge search was launched in the area, and police were left with two questions. Where are the Bentleys and their camper? And why did all of this occur? Authorities knew that they needed to use the media to their advantage if they were going to get answers. We all know that sometimes the police and media don't go too well together.
Correct.
The breaking news of this awful murder homicide was everywhere, and they wanted to use it to their advantage. A phone call comes in from a park ranger who states that he saw a camper a few weeks prior and it was parked at Bear Creek campsite. Bear Creek is a very remote and desolate area in which to camp, and that's just what the Johnson family liked. They liked to be remote and kind of stay
away from everybody,
which is exactly where I would not go, just saying. Investigators head to the area to see what they can find. When they arrive, a search reveals 6 .22 caliber shells along with some beer bottles. It was the same brand of beer that George Bentley liked to drink. Authorities now believe that Bear Creek was in fact the murder site, but they still need to find that truck camper, as it was not there. They believe that that camper would help provide some of the answers that they needed. Once again, authorities reach out to the media with the hopes of someone coming forward with information. Calls flood in. One is a waitress who claimed she saw a truck and it was being driven by two men whom she believed to be French-Canadian since they didn't speak a lot of English. Her words, not mine. Now that they have a vague description of the men that they believe to have committed these crimes, they wanted more. Canada is huge, and they needed to get all that information out there because they believed that the killers at this point were in that truck and moving across Canada. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police, RCMP as they're called, decide to get creative. They hatch a plan to get a similar truck and camper shell, post signs on the side of it asking the public if they've seen a truck like this, and then they're going to drive it all around the country. They would stop the truck, often at highly populated areas, such as a mall, and they would have a local news crew there to cover the stops. They wanted it to be in the front of everyone's mind, since the tips coming in were giving them an idea that the killers were just traveling along the highways without a care in the world in a stolen truck that they murdered to get. A man in Windsor, Canada, was watching the local coverage, and he knew right away not only that he had seen that truck, but he had talked to the two men in it. The conversation would let the RCMP know that they were on the right path. The man tells investigators the two men drove up in the middle of the night and had mentioned that they needed a paint job for the truck and they were willing to pay cash for it. They stated that the truck had had a camper on it, but they had just removed it. When the man mentioned to police that the truck had some modifications to the front and back bumpers, the police knew immediately it was the truck they were looking for, as George Bentley was the man who made those modifications on it. Police had not released this information to the public. He was telling the truth. Oh, and the men? They also had a rifle and wanted to know if the man knew of how they could get rid of it. Police were thrilled. They were about to locate these men in the truck, or so they believed. They were about to get all the answers they wanted, until a phone call came in to Detective Eastham. Two park rangers who had watched the news and were familiar with the case were patrolling the park and ran smack dab into the vacant truck with the camper shell on it. Say what? So that truck was in that park the whole time.
Amazing.
So all these lies, like these people, this guy saying all that, and it yeah. Fit was not
totally lies.
Not true. Needless to say that they were not happy about that, the police. October 18th, 1983. The RCMP arrive on scene and the truck is burnt to a crisp. All except for one thing, the license plate, which positively identified it as the truck that belonged to the Bentleys. The truck was located on top of Trophy Mountain, which was very hard to get to. You would have to be familiar with it.
Right.
To have
and
it
you get
up
a trophy
there.
When you get up there? Is that how that
Guess
works?
So. Just like the burnt car, the truck was driven off the main roads in an attempt to hide it. The killer or killers were deep into the park, letting the authorities know one thing. The killer or killers were familiar, very familiar with the park.
Would have to be.
Which means he was a local resident. Also, there was a bullet hole in the truck. The decision was made right then and there to keep that information out of the public. Only law enforcement would know about this. And that would be the key to helping find the killer. The detective team hits the area hard, knocking on doors to try to get some information about the locals. One of the young detectives out knocking on doors radios in with something he thinks might be important. As he was questioning a man who was not happy to comply with his questions, as illustrated by his short, abrupt answers, a woman pops out of the cabin and said in front of the detective, "Aren't you going to tell them about David and that shot up truck?" Knowing there was something to this, the detective stayed nearby, secretly watching and waiting for the man to leave. And when he did, he got his chance to ask the woman about this David character. The woman tells him that David is David Shearing, and he lives on a ranch on Wells Gray Park Road. David had told the couple that he had found a truck up in the mountain with a bullet hole in the door. Now, authorities have a name, and they know they must speak to David Shearing. David Shearing was a local who was working as a logger. He had an arrest record, which included drugs, DUI, and assault. There was a rumor going around that David had committed a hit and run of a young teen years prior, but he was never caught for it. Police look into it, and yep, 2 years ago, a teen by the name of Dave Carter was found dead on the side of the highway, and no one was ever arrested. Oh, and this David Shearing seemed to have a thing for young girls.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
David Shearing becomes the prime suspect. His background as a logger would allow him to have knowledge of the area, and not just the roads, but the land, as he lived only 3 miles away from the murder site. David Shearing is brought into the station and is questioned. Police decide to play it cool and keep him calm, get him to relax. They want to establish a rapport with him. Shearing mentions that he is currently taking care of his mom. Put that in the back of your head, right?
Mm-hmm. Taking care of her, or took care of her.
Well, authorities know that that's going to be his soft spot, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Detective Eastham asks him if he's a hunter, and he says, yes, he is. As a matter of fact, he has a .22 at home. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
.22 was the gun that was used.
Mm-hmm.
Police then tell him that a few years ago, there was a body found on the side of the road. Shearing lets out a sigh, as if to say, phew, that's it, that's all. Shearing admits that he did, in fact, hit that kid, and he ran off. But, you know, he was going to talk to somebody about that because, you know, it was just an accident. It wasn't his fault. He didn't mean to do it. Police then ask, why wouldn't you come to us right away when it happened, David? And David says, my mom, it would have crushed her. Detective Eastham decides it's time to strike. He reached into a folder sitting next to him, and he brings out a photo of Karen and Janet Johnson, the two young Johnson girls. Then he follows it up with more photos of the family. Detective Eastham asks what his mother thought about this beautiful family being slaughtered. David says, well, she was sad. Detective Eastham then asks, what about you, David? What did you think when you heard about the burnt car on Battle Mountain? You go up there? David says, yeah. Eastham then says, so have you ever been to Trophy Mountain? You know, that's where they found the camper in the truck, right? And David says, yes, I think once. I worked there once. Eastham said, so you've been up there, but only once because you worked there? David said, yeah, I guess. Eastham then asked, what about the campsite where they were killed? You spend any time there? David then replies, no, I don't like Bear Creek much.
Hmm.
And with that, David just told on himself.
Exactly.
Detective Eastham never said where the campsite was. He just said it was the campsite in which they were murdered. And with that, the look on David's face revealed to him he knew he had just made a huge mistake.
Big dummy.
The gig is up. David needs to tell them exactly what happened. David tells officers it was nighttime when he crept up to the campfire. As the family was gathered around it, he watched them for a few minutes and then slowly took aim. He shot Jackie, then Bob, then Grandma and Grandpa, and then he bent down and shot both little girls in the back of the head. He then puts all the bodies in the car. He takes the car with the bodies in it, mind you, and drives up the mountain where he set it on fire. He then hiked back to get the truck. He stated he was going to keep the truck, but then with all the news coverage and publicity, he knew he had to get rid of it. He stated he killed them because he wanted their stuff, and the camper had some tools in it. He wanted those too. David Shearing killed 6 people, 3 generations of an entire family, simply because he wanted their stuff. Was that really all? David Shearing would receive the maximum penalty under Canadian law, and that was 25 years until he could apply for parole for the 6 second degree murder charges.
25 years. That's 25, that's nothing.
This was the first time in Canadian history that that penalty had been handed down. He was first eligible for parole in 2012 and was thankfully denied. Shearing has yet to receive parole for these heinous crimes. I hope it stays that way until he dies. He's applied 3 times. The 3rd time, he took it back and didn't do it. So the case is over for him, but it was not over for Detective Eastham. He made a deal with David, and the deal was this. When the trial's over and he's convicted, that detective wanted the truth because he knew that he did not kill six people for their stuff.
Right.
Detective Eastham went to visit David after his conviction. And it was then that David finally admitted what it was that he wanted from that family. It was the two little girls. David kept them alive for approximately 10 days. He wasn't sure. It was somewhere between 9 and 10 days. Sexually abusing them before he finally killed them and burned them and placed their remains in the trunk of that car up on the top of the mountain. 25
years to die. America would be killed. Death penalty, for sure. Yeah. Holy cow.
And see, when they first found that car, like, they still were thinking the Bentleys, the grandma and grandpa, were gone. Right. They didn't realize that they were in the car. So he drove up there with the grandma, grandpa, mom, and dad, dead bodies in the car.
With the two kids?
No, because he kept them for 10 days. He went and got them, burnt them, and then put them in the trunk. That's why they were in the trunk.
Disgusting.
At the end, the detective's like, what's your mom going to say now? Now you need to, and that's partly why he did confess, because the detective was like, she needs to know that you're not a terrible person, that you are going to confess to this, but that they use that mom as the leverage to get him to confess.
Disgusting human being.
Right? 11 and 13, that's like our girl's ages.
I know. That's exactly my girl's ages.
And kept him alive, and then he... Anyway, that's all I got. You want to tell the good people where they can find us? FYI, don't go camping.
That's what this whole series is about. Anti-camping propaganda. You can find us on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. We have a blog, ourtruecrimepodcast.com. We have Patreon if you want to sign up for Patreon. We do some fun stuff there, actually.
Working on it.
Going to be doing a happy hour with Jen and Cam.
Whoop, whoop.
Or Cam and Jen. We don't know.
Cam and Jen.
It'll change.
If you're on our Patreon, you're going to be receiving a little goodie in the mail pretty soon.
Yeah, if you haven't already gotten it.
Oh, yeah, you probably have.
Because we're recording this
ahead of time.
Yeah,
sorry.
We're recording it early, so.
I like to talk in real time. Like, I forget that we're not, forget that we're not live.
Yep.
Speaking of which, could you imagine the shit show that we'd be live?
Oh.
It'd be terrible.
Well, we'll find out soon enough.
Terrible. Anyway, so remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
And don't go camping. Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful.
It's summertime and the living's easy. Summertime. Told you can't sing. I'm trying to think. What's that? Miami. Miami.
Huh? What?
I'm trying to think of the Will Smith song. No, I sang that one already.
Did you?
Never mind. Yeah. No, summertime and the living's easy. I don't know. Whatever. Cut all that out, Nico. I'm getting a little stir crazy. British Columbia. Canada.
Mm-hmm. Hey, that's where Mike and True Crime. We love Mike from that.
Good thing that's not the name of our show.
I know. Could you imagine?
Poor Nico. Mm.
And they even drink and they say that name.
Ooh,
Brew Time.
Oh my God.
And we're sober.
I've had two glasses of water today.
Yeah. Brew Time True Crime. Wow, that's a thinker.
Man.
You got to think to say that.
Missing also was their I like had a stroke there trying to say that word. Did you see me? I couldn't get it out. Oh my God. Sorry.
Are you okay?
I said, it was like it wouldn't come out. Sorry. Oof.
You've got a hard time saying funk in the trunk.
It's truck, and I can't get it out. Police were thrilled. They were sure they were about to locate. The police were thrilled. They were sure they were... I decided I want to be a black woman.
Okay.
28 years old.
Okay. We can arrange that.
They just seem so cool, you know, and pretty.
Attitudes.
Just everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Self-esteem and...
I love it. Okay. I was watching She's Gotta Have It. I love it. Plus, I'm going to order that soundtrack. It's super good. Anyway, back to me.
It's David.
Fucking punch you. I got three more. But yeah, Miss Fancy Pants. You know how many times I've been reading today? My God.
I said I'd do it.
Yeah, you're going to do it. I'm going to make fun of you so hard. You're going to cry. You can go home and cry. That's you can fine. Do take your computer.
I'm already home.
Okay.
I can't cry from.
Okay, here we go. Lord, I hope he has an easy last name. I can't remember.